Hi, everybody. Dr. Melissa Robinson Weinmiller here, your host for The Empathic Leader, where we talk all things empathy, emotional intelligence, and leadership. I'm so happy to have you with me today. Please like, subscribe, and comment, because that's how we keep the conversation going. And if we think of empathy as understanding and connecting, the more we can help people understand what it really is and connect into the wider world, the more we're actually fulfilling our mission. So please, let's keep this conversation going, big and bold. Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Empathic Leader Podcast. Modern leadership isn't getting any easier. We're not just talking about the normal day-to-day stressors. We're also talking quiet quitting, presenteeism, post-pandemic stress, AI, technology, and generational friction, among other things. And the old school command and control style of leadership just doesn't work anymore. I'm Dr. Melissa Robinson Weinmiller, and I'm coming to you with 2 doctorates, 20 plus years of leadership experience, and I'm on a mission to turn leaders into innovators who drive real-world results. On this podcast, we'll explore how to elevate leadership through the often overlooked power of emotional intelligence and empathy. Let's get started. So one of the questions that I've been getting lately when I've been out speaking is, what blocks empathy? What keeps people from using empathy? If this is something that's natural to a certain degree and learned to a certain degree, then why wouldn't we use it? And that's a fantastic question. Now, this is setting aside our dark triad, right? Which my audience already knows, that's talking about people that have greatly reduced or no empathy, right? Sociopaths and psychopaths, Machiavellians, narcissists. Dark triad aside, if you have empathy, what would block you from using it? The first answer to that is just a lack of understanding of what it is. And my audience understands this, that empathy is not just about feeling, that the I feel what you feel or emotional empathy is important. It's very important. It's part of what it is. And I'm not minimizing that, but it's a very small part of what is empathy. And in terms of leadership, the three kinds that seem to really go together is emotional empathy, or I feel what you feel, cognitive empathy, or I logically understand what you're feeling, I just don't necessarily feel anything, and self-empathy, being able to connect and understand with the self first. Because if you can't understand yourself and connect with yourself, how do you think you're going to do it with anybody else? And as cliche as it sounds, stop and think about it, because it's really the truth. So when people don't really understand empathy and they think it's only I feel what you're feeling, they're leaving out the whole other side of things. The one I want to drill in on especially is cognitive empathy, because that ability to logically understand is really massive. Empathy doesn't mean I understand your exact situation. It doesn't mean that I know what it is to be in your shoes. It means I understand what it is to feel what you feel. And that might be through feeling, that might be cognitively, that might be connecting to something that you felt that was similar, right? If someone feels lost, they've just lost a parent. You may not have ever lost a parent, but you may have lost a pet. You may have lost a job. You may know what that feeling of loss is. You may not know to the same degree, but cognitively you can say, okay, this is kind of like that. And be able to be in that feeling with them. Because you understand what empathy is, you can adequately use it. Emotional empathy is important, but it just doesn't tell the whole story. Another block from empathy from us, that we may not want to feel empathy, is if we're hurt or angry. Have you ever been in a situation where you're just so hurt and so angry that you close down? It's a protective mechanism. I think most of us probably have. There is a theory that anger is a secondary emotion, that there are primal emotions that we have, fear being one of these, and that as a result, to protect us, anger will come out. And this is important because this is seeing anger kind of as a sentry, saying, hey, something's going on here and we need to be safe. But part of that, being a sentry, right, is going to be to close off and guard. If you're in a medieval city and you've got an attacking force, you're going to close the gates and try and keep everybody else out, Well, it's the same thing. We don't want to feel empathy because we're already overloaded and the hurt and the anger are just too much. Fear is a big part of this as well. It's a big reason why we can't really have empathy for people that we're afraid of. But unfortunately, we tend to be afraid of people that we just don't understand. So you end up with a lack of empathy between groups that actually maybe have a lot in common. But there's an empathy block there. Being in an unempathic environment. I think this is a big one. Because as we've said, having empathy doesn't mean you don't have boundaries. And if you find yourself in this kind of an environment and you are an empathic person, it's really important to be able to protect yourself to a certain degree. Unfortunately, a lot of this drips down from the top. So if you have leadership that's really unempathic and very Montgomery Burns from The Simpsons and maybe has their priorities a little mislaid, that's going to drip down throughout. And you may find yourself in a position that you can't get out of immediately where the environment is unempathic. So the best thing you can do is put up boundaries. And if you can, try to find a microcosm where you can have empathy, where you can be vulnerable, where you can be open. But use your boundaries to keep you safe. I used to work for a healthcare system. And I actually worked for a fertility specialist. And he was great. He was fantastic. But it meant that I worked facing couples that were having trouble conceiving, that maybe had lost babies with miscarriages and having trouble conceiving, that may be coming in to try in vitro more than once. And I saved my empathy for them because the facility itself was very unempathic, and a lot of it came down from the top. We were cogs in a machine, and we were all replaceable, and nobody really cared what we did. But to those people that were there because of infertility, I could make a difference. It made a difference to them that I was able to touch their lives and maybe be able to help them get through a system that was just as unempathic for the patients as it was for the staff and the clinical staff. Build your own empathic microcosm. If you can't, put up boundaries and try to get out. I hate to say it, but there are some systems that just you're not going to be able to do anything about. Along with this is feeling it's inappropriate to use empathy. If you're in a place that's highly competitive, that always have people at each other's throats, that just you feel that if you show any kind of empathy or vulnerability or openness, you're going to be eaten alive, then you have to just put up your boundaries and do the best you can. Now, there are some situations you'll find where it's not necessarily that it is inappropriate, but just that it hasn't been tried before. And you may be the one who can lead the way and actually show leadership through empathy and how well it can work. You might be the one who can actually bring a brand new point of view to this. So don't necessarily forget the whole thing just because it feels inappropriate. Take your time and feel it out. See what you think. So, as most people know, I used to be a professor in music. And in music, as it is in most arts, it's a very cutthroat feel. There's always somebody else practicing. There's always somebody else working harder. You're only as good as your last performance. Athletics are this way too. It's just a very difficult field to be in because of the competitiveness. So even within this university that I was in, some of that competitiveness trickled into the faculty. And I knew it was inappropriate to show any kind of empathy to some of these people, any kind of openness, any kind of vulnerability. It would have been suicidal. But my students didn't know that. And so I was able to take an overall atmosphere of this department where any kind of empathy or vulnerability felt inappropriate and show them that within this microcosm, yeah, you can use empathy, you can use connection, you can use understanding. And in fact, you should, because most of these people were going to be teachers. But even beyond that, there's no reason not to. This ultra competitiveness is manufactured. There was no reason for it. It's just the way the business is, and it's too bad. Feel it out, though. Maybe it's not actually inappropriate. Maybe it just feels that way because other people don't understand it. Empathy tends to be less sensitive to large numbers of victims. And this is another one of those weird idiosyncrasies of the human brain. I did an episode about stereotyping not that long ago, and talking about how the human brain will develop heuristics or rules of thumb. The whole point is that our brain is big, relatively speaking, and so it uses a lot of calories. So our bodies have figured out how to make our brains so that they use less calories. And one way they do this is to take shortcuts in our thinking. So thinking in terms of stereotypes, right? If you're dealing with the human brain and you're making decisions about people, the first time you do it, it'll be, well, this happened, which made me think this, which made me think this, which brought me to this. And my overall decision is that this person maybe isn't good for me. Next time, your brain will want to cut out a lot of those decisions in between to save calories, to save energy, and jump to the end. And unfortunately, that's how stereotypes are born. If this woman did this, then all women are like this. Then all Asians are like this. Then all African Americans are like this. Then all boomers are like this. You end up with this heuristic in place of actual logical, rational thought. It's the same kind of thing when we're thinking about large numbers of victims. Joseph Stalin said that a single death is considered a tragedy, but a million deaths are considered a statistic. And that makes me cringe to even say it, but it is the way our brains handle it, because a single person, we can see that person as an individual, as a person, as someone we know. A million people is just more than we can get a hold of. Maybe there's some defense there. I would think that the pain and the tragedy of a million deaths might be too much for a single person to handle. The point is that we are going to be more sensitive to the death of a single person than we are of a whole city, of a whole country, especially if we're removed from them. If there's a natural disaster, hurricane, tornado, earthquake, fire, and the news shows this person, an individual that lost their house, that lost their life, that lost their livelihood, that's going to have more of an impact on our empathy than if it just puts up statistics that 27 people in the town of Pumpkin Center died due to this tornado. So the solution is to tap into your cognitive empathy. Just like with stereotyping, we understand where the biases come in. We understand what a heuristic is. So we can use our cognitive empathy to say, no, I'm not going to let my brain take those shortcuts. I'm going to relate to people on an individual level. This is the same thing. No, I'm not going to let my brain not allow me to use empathy just because it's a larger number of people. I'm going to relate to these people as an individual. Two places where I see this, where this could be particularly helpful. And one is with leaders. I mean, you're over a lot of people. Could be two people, could be thousands, could be more if we're talking huge multi-global national companies. You have to remember to keep these people in mind as individuals. The decisions affect the individual. It's very easy to start seeing people as numbers and entries in a ledger. If it's what you deal with all day long, it's a habit. It's what happens. There's no judgment there at all. But we are humans, and we have the ability to plug in our cognitive empathy and go, yeah, I'm not going to think of it like that because I need to know what's going on with my people. This is why it's so important to get out and make your rounds and talk to people, because you're seeing individuals. You may not be able to see everybody in your company. In fact, probably not. But the point is that you're there and you're being seen and they're feeling heard and you have faces. It's not just this mass of people that you don't know who they are. They're individuals with lives and needs and wants. And that's important to keep that in the forefront of our brain so that when the cognitive empathy kicks in, you can see these people and go, yeah, I can see exactly what needs to happen here. The other place I see this happening a lot is in the government. When you're overseeing a big constituency or even a small constituency, it becomes easy to kind of forget the single person. You know, would I be okay with this if it was my mom? Would I be okay with this if it was my grandparents or my partner or my siblings or my children? People get caught up in making decisions. And on a large scale, they may even think that these decisions are going to be useful to people. But if you don't actually connect with the individual, understanding that, yeah, this big group of people is made up of smaller individuals and that certain things are necessary, it becomes easy to think of people as a group. I had something like this happen as well. I was living up in Michigan, and my husband and I were trying to sell a house. And the city government there put down an edict that all of a sudden, all septic tanks had to be completely removed, changed, whatever, before you could sell a house. Well, the problem is that we were selling the house because we needed to move because we didn't have the money to have the house. We didn't have $10,000 to be able to fix the septic tank. We didn't have that kind of cushion to be able to change it. Well, unfortunately, no one would buy the house to take on that burden. And who can blame them? I mean, who wants to take on someone else's problem? The problem is that this edict was put in effect while we were trying to sell the house. And it wasn't grandfathered in that we'd gotten it on the market before. It wasn't that, you know, you guys were ahead of the curve. It was just, this is how it is. And the government didn't really care that people couldn't afford it. Their reaction when we went to meetings was, well, that's too bad. I guess you should find the money. And we ended up losing the house. They foreclosed on it. And this has been an ongoing problem for us financially ever since. But the point is that the government didn't really care how this was affecting particular people. It had happened because some people were dumping sewage into rivers around there from animal farms and that sort of thing, and it was polluting the water, and it had some kind of connection to septic. I don't understand exactly how, but the point is that they were so busy looking at large groups of people, they didn't understand that it affected. There was quite a few of us, actually. Because it was a small town, and I would say it was in the 20s. Understand your brain isn't going to connect with large groups of individuals the way it will with individuals, and plan for it by using cognitive empathy. Empathy fatigue is a big one. There's a lot of studies in healthcare spaces about this. About how people who have to use empathy all the time, too much, eventually just burn out. And when we're talking healthcare workers, we can talk about burnout completely, as in leave the field. And you can in other fields as well. I've heard of teachers that have the same kind of problem. This, again, is where having boundaries is important. You have to be able to put your boundaries to protect yourself first. It's like that old adage of you have to put your oxygen mask on if a plane is crashing before you help your child. Because if you don't help yourself first, you can't help anybody else. It's the same thing. Having empathy doesn't mean we don't have boundaries. And if you feel you're heading towards empathy fatigue, you've got to protect yourself. I had that happen as well in the same fertility clinic I was talking about earlier. And I eventually had to leave because I just couldn't take the patients giving them that much empathy every day anymore. Now that I'm a little bit older, I think I would try to put my boundaries in place better. At that time, I didn't understand. And that's why I'm here, so that hopefully I can help you understand so that you don't make the mistakes I made, right? The last one, and the biggest one, and the one I talk about the most because it's the easiest to fix, is judgment. Empathy and judgment cannot exist in the same space. If you're judging something and you're placing ideas about what's good or what's right or what's appropriate, you cut off connection and understanding. You're not looking to understand that other person because you're only looking at it through your lens. Remember, empathy means you're seeing it through the eyes of the other person and not through your own. Being able to see that this judgment is happening and step away from it, even if it means by using cognitive empathy, is probably the single most important thing that you could do. We all do it. That judgment, that wanting to come to a snap decision, it's part of the human nature. But if you can figure out how to move around it, I'm judging this person. I don't need to judge this person. I just need to be in feeling with this person. It will make their life better, but it will allow you to use your empathy the way it's meant to be used. And same with all other habits. The more you do it, the easier it becomes until you don't think about it anymore. We spend a lot of time judging. So if there's one place that you could start with this, it would be in judgment of yourself. It's very hard to use self-empathy when you're constantly judging what you do, or judging yourself as not living up, or rethinking your decisions. Take a moment, figure out where you've judged yourself lately, and give yourself some empathy that we are humans, we are all doing the best we can, and cut yourself some slack. Dr. Melissa Robinson Weinmiller here. Thank you so much for joining me. This is The Empathic Leader. Please like, subscribe, and comment, and I will see you on the next episode. Well, that's a wrap for The Empathic Leader podcast for today. If you found today's episode valuable, please subscribe and share, and let's keep this conversation rolling. Until next time, lead with empathy to lead with impact, and always keep a cool head and a warm heart.